Please take your Bibles once again and turn to the book of Habakkuk. Habakkuk chapter 1, beginning with verse 12, and we'll read through the second chapter. It's on pages 1081 to 1083 of the Bibles provided there in your rows. We read, "Are you not from everlasting, O Lord my God, my Holy One? We shall not die. O Lord, you have appointed them for judgment. O rock, you have marked them for correction. You are of purer eyes than to behold evil and cannot look on wickedness. Why do you look on those who deal treacherously and hold your tongue when the wicked devours a person more righteous than he? Why do you make men like fish of the sea, like creeping things that have no ruler over them? They take up all of them with a hook. They catch them in their net and gather them in their dragnet. Therefore they rejoice and are glad. Therefore they sacrifice to their net and burn incense to their dragnet. Because by them their share is sumptuous and their food plentiful. Shall they therefore empty their net and continue to slay nations without pity? I will stand my watch and set myself on the rampart and watch to see what he will say to me and what I will answer when I am corrected." Then the Lord answered me and said, "Write the vision, make it plain on tablets, that he may run who reads it, for the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it will speak and it will not lie, though it tarries. Wait for it, because it will surely come, it will not tarry. Behold the proud, his soul is not upright in him, but the just shall live by his faith. Indeed, because he transgresses by wine, he's a proud man, and he does not stay at home, because he enlarges his desire as hell. He is like death and cannot be satisfied. He gathers to himself all nations and heaps up for himself all peoples. Will not all these take up a proverb against him and a taunting riddle against him and say, 'Woe to him who increases what is not his. How long? And to him who loads himself with many pledges, will not your creditors rise up suddenly? Will they not awaken who oppress you, and you will become their booty? Because you have plundered many nations, all the remnant of the people shall plunder you because of men's blood and the violence of the land and the city and of all who dwell in it. Woe to him who covets evil gain for his house, that he may set his nest on high, that he may be delivered from the power of disaster. You give shameful counsel to your house, cutting off many peoples, and sin against your soul, for the stone will cry out from the wall, and the beam from the timbers will answer it. Woe to him who builds a town with bloodshed, who establishes a city by iniquity. Behold, is it not of the Lord of hosts that the people labor to feed the fire, and nations weary themselves in vain? For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Woe to him who gives drink to his neighbor, pressing him to your bottle, even to make him drunk, that you may look on his nakedness. You're filled with shame instead of glory. You also drink and be exposed as uncircumcised. The cup of the Lord's right hand will be turned against you. For the violence done to Lebanon will cover you, and the plunder of beasts which make them afraid, because of men's blood and the violence of the land, of the city, and of all who dwell in it. What profit is the image that its maker should carve it, the molded image, a teacher of lies, that the maker of its mold should trust in it to make mute idols? Woe to him who says to wood, 'Awake,' to silent stone, 'Arise.' It shall teach. Behold, it is overlaid with gold and silver, yet in it there is no breath at all. But the Lord is in his temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him." Thus far the reading of God's holy word. May he add his richest blessing, the reading and hearing of it this morning. This morning, I want to consider God and evil. Nothing like a really easy topic, right? God and evil. Last time we looked at the book of Habakkuk, we considered when God was silent. This time we see how God uses evil in order to accomplish his purposes. Now, you might sit there and hear that and think to yourself, oh great, we're just going to get into a whole philosophical discussion and contemplation and reflection on this topic that is really just settled for ivory towers and classrooms for college freshmen. If we're honest, we've reflected a lot about God and evil. What's your reflections in relation to various things happening in the world? Any of you get upset when you look and see the news and as a result you hear that a country minding its own business, causing no trouble, all of a sudden is invaded by a country that is just hungry for power and conquest? Are you ever bothered when you hear the stories of how the rich just get richer and the poor just seem to continue to be poor? What are you observing? Actions that you would say, that's not right, that ought not take place, and you then become troubled by it. You're starting to deal with the issue of, well, where's God when I'm seeing evil in this world? How about as you look around the nation and you see decisions being made, actions that are occurring, and through it then you see how the honest and the truthful and the righteous are being maligned. And those who are dishonest and not zealous of good seem to somehow be getting ahead and in control and accomplishing all sorts of things that you thought otherwise wouldn't happen. You're not dealing with the issue of, well, here's evil, and where's God? Let's bring it right to home. Any of you ever been passed up for a promotion at work? Only to be passed up by the lazy guy on the shift who everyone else has to pick up his slack? You ever had that happen before? Ever observed various relationships and you think of all the people, this person is a wonderful person, a godly Christian, and yet they seem to have the worst of it in terms of their life. Their kids all don't want to be around them anymore, maybe even hate them. Their spouse has said, that's it, I've had it, I'm done. And here this person is dealing with it all to no fault of their own. You ever act kindly to your neighbor, and yet your neighbor just seems to belittle any action and even possibly seeks to go after you? All of these are dealing with circumstances in life where we're observing evil, struggle, challenges, and consequently could be led to the question of what in the world is going on? And where is God? Now, we saw last time how God seemed silent. How as Habakkuk had observed things in terms of his country, he saw Israel living in sin and yet wondered, why would God allow that? Why wouldn't he intervene? Why wouldn't he act? And God said, oh, I'm still here, I'm not spoken, but I'm still here, and since you've asked, let me tell you. Yeah, I'm going to bring the Chaldeans, the Babylonians in as judgment upon your sin, so that you then will be taken into captivity. Which leads then to Habakkuk asking in verse 12 and following, well, Lord, if you're going to judge us, I know I was asking how you're allowing sin, but you really want to use someone who's worse on us? Does that seem right? Does that seem proper? Is that in accordance with a good plan? How can God use an evil, wicked nation in order to accomplish His will? How can God use circumstances that we would look at and say are troubling and still use it in a manner to accomplish His will, and even to do good? And so we want to consider this for a few minutes this morning. As we do so, we firstly just simply want to see that as we have this struggle, the first thing that we need to do is to go to God and not be withdrawn. The first thing that we need to do is go to God and not be withdrawn. How do we gather this? Well, Habakkuk hears this news in verses 5 through 11 that God's going to use the Chaldeans, and we don't then end up seeing Habakkuk respond by walking away, by fleeing, by running away, by somehow reaching out to a whole bunch of other people to find the wise pundits of the day to say, well, we're observing this circumstance in the world, and can you then tell us what we're to think of this, how we're to observe this, how we're to respond to this or to interact with this? No, we see that Habakkuk's response is to go right back to God. This is important. It's important for a few different reasons. The first of which is, who else should you or can you go to? Well, you can go to lots of people. But who should you go to? What can anyone else do as it relates to the totality of world history and events that occur within your life? Who else can control that? Who else can address it? Who can effectively work in it? Who can accomplish anything to make any significant difference or importance regarding a particular concern or situation that pertains to you? Who can do it ultimately? Who ultimately can explain to you, to help you understand what is taking place and occurring? After all, the wicked seem to advance. Wicked nations seem to be accomplishing more. In terms of Israel's situation or Judah's situation, here they're being judged by the living God through the hand of the Chaldeans. Who else should Habakkuk go to? No one. He ultimately goes to the living Lord. It's important for us to remember this, because there are times in which we observe things in the world or things in our own life and we're filled with all sorts of doubt. We have difficult challenges and issues. Challenges trying to ponder exactly what is occurring in our life at the very moment. Dealing with feelings of uncertainty and insecurities because of circumstances that may be beyond our control. Times in which we receive news that changes our life. It affects the plans that we had in mind only to make us pursue different plans. Maybe it's the issue of the health of a child. Maybe it's your own health. Maybe it's the news that your company that you're a part of is going under. Maybe it's decisions that your child has decided to make and now you have to respond to it and you have to deal with it. And maybe circumstances in the community of decisions being made by leaders or events happening in the nation or even globally. In all of these things, we have difficult issues that cause doubts and troubles and discouragements. And if we had our way, we would intervene and change it. But we know we can't do that. So as a result, what tends to be your approach? Well, one, how many of you have withdrawn and decided to become depressed or to pout over a circumstance? Things are all crazy in the world. What is this world coming to? Fox News has informed me of this matter, or the talking head on CNN has said that. And it just seems to get worse and worse and worse. And so we reach out to one another and we express all sorts of doubts. And beyond the doubts, we then go, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. Woe is me. I'm just so sad. How often when you hear bad news in the news, do you turn the TV off and simply go, Lord, I need to pray and come to you? Other times we have the response of being angry and pulling away. This isn't what I expect. Oh, you're awake now. This isn't what I expected. This isn't going my way. This isn't what I thought should happen. And consequently, God, I'm mad at you and I'm upset that you would even allow this to transpire in my life. And so you know what? I'm leaving you. I'm just abandoning you. And I'm going to control things my way now. And I'm going to make it go based on how I think it should go and how I want it to be. And so what happens? Pull away from God, filled with doubt. Pull away from God, filled with depression. Pull away from God, and hey, I'm just going to depend on me, and I'm going to make it happen the way that I see it. So how's that working for you? Really? Well, depression, if you stay there long enough, then you got to go talk to someone and possibly take something for it. If you're pouting, people eventually say, I don't want to be with a pouter. So now you're alone and you're even further depressed. If you're angry, how has your anger been overcome? It's not. It's only filling you and consuming you all the more. That's why Habakkuk's response here of going to God is the only solution. But consider what Habakkuk notes about God as to why it makes sense for us to go to Him. This is the second idea. One, you should go to God. Two, you should go to God because of His character. Listen to what Habakkuk notes in verse 12. And 13, are you not from everlasting, O Lord my God, my Holy One? We shall not die. O Lord, you have appointed them for judgment. O rock, you have marked them for correction. You are of pure eyes and to behold evil and cannot look on wickedness. Why do you look on those who deal treacherously and hold your tongue when the wicked devours a person more righteous than he? Why do you make men like fish of the sea, like creeping things that have no ruler over them? What is he noting? He's noting five different things concerning the character of God that would encourage us, that would equip us, and cause us to be able to say, it makes sense for me to go to this one then. Because my circumstances aren't like God's. My life isn't like God's. My situation isn't like His. Notice what he notes about this one, that God is eternal. Are you not from everlasting? Habakkuk is ultimately noting that the Lord is from eternity and to eternity. That because God is not bound by history, but rather He's outside of space and time, He shows Himself to be the one who reigns over history and is not subject to it. And therefore, as things change, we hear what? Jesus is the same, yesterday, today, and forever. God is not bound by any limitation that is creaturely or earthly. And so He's not limited by time. Before anything was ever made, God was. As things go on, God is. And He stays the same. And as things will progress further, God will still be. And He will reign over it all. This also shows us how God is self-existent. By the identification of Lord, when He says, O Lord, my God, my Holy One, He's invoking the name that God used to reveal Himself to Moses. That He always was, that He always will be, that He is unmade, He is unmoved, He's independent of anything. His existence depends on no one. He is the one who is set apart, absolutely perfect, as the Holy One. He is the one who is perfect in terms of all of His being, His righteousness, His beauty, His glory, all of His perfections. None is like this God. And this one, even in terms of His actions and the use of things that we don't understand and can't explain, still will do no wrong. He's the eternal one. He is the one who is self-existent, dependent on no one. He is perfectly glorious in terms of His entirety of His being. And He then is the Almighty One. He is the Sovereign One, full of power, and is able to do all His holy will. In fact, nothing happens without His will. By Him, all things occur, all things exist, all things transpire, and He oversees it all and utilizes it all for His purposes. And lastly, through these verses, we see that God is faithful. God is faithful because He notes through these verses that even though He will act in a manner that brings judgment upon the Chaldeans, Habakkuk recognizes that Israel or Judah will not end totally, but God will preserve a remnant, and consequently, He will keep His word. He promised Abraham that Abraham would have a seed and that all the nations of the earth would be blessed through him, and God brings it about. He promised David that there would be one to reign on His eternal throne, and God is bringing it about. God will make sure that all of His promises are true and right and perfect and brought into fulfillment. For the moment that one of His promises never occurs or doesn't come to fruition is the moment that God shows Himself to be the one who He is not. And as a result, He no longer gets to serve in the position of God. Habakkuk sees a problem. The Chaldeans are coming to serve as God's servant to exercise judgment on Judah. And instead of turning to a whole bunch of different places, Habakkuk simply turns back to God. And he recognizes that in turning to Him, He is the appropriate one to turn to because of who He is. How does that direct you in terms of addressing your problems, your circumstances, your situation? How often is your tendency to either withdraw? Lord, I don't want to talk to you right now because I don't like what you're doing. And consequently, I think that you're ultimately being mean and you're not being very caring or thoughtful about me. And so you pull away. Have you ever accused God of being wrong in terms of what He's done, so that you then repudiate He and His holy will? Have you ever been angry with Him and consequently taking it out on His people, so that you then sulk and grumble and complain and gripe? Habakkuk's in his situation because Judah was being impure and unfaithful. And yet he doesn't then go around complaining to his fellow kinsmen. He ultimately takes it to the one to whom he can, the faithful, almighty, eternal, holy, self-existent God, and says, because of who you are, how can this be? How about this direction for you? Habakkuk helps us further to see that as these things happen in our lives and even situations that we can't explain or can't necessarily understand, there are steps that we ought to take. Not only as we go to God, but even to recognize the situation. Recognize what is truly before us. And as we then acknowledge it, be honest about what it is. Don't make it bigger than it is. Don't make it smaller than it is. But as you identify the problem, recognize the greatness of the one who is at work in the circumstance. And realize that when you do, it will completely change your approach and perspective on the matter. How so? Because you ultimately see that God, in relation to His sovereignty, His strength, His immutability, His independence, and His work, is able to effectively work through the entirety of your circumstance. And then lastly, you commit it to Him. Look at what Habakkuk does in chapter 2, verse 1. I will stand my watch, set myself on my rampart, watch to see what he will say to me, and what I will answer when I'm corrected. How often do you like to play tennis with the living God? What do I mean by that? You serve something to him, expecting him to send it back to you so that you might then be able to take it and hold on to it further and then send it back to him again, only to then have the desire that he'll then send it back to you. Maybe as opposed to tennis, fishing is better. But that's not what we're called to do. We're called to leave things before the living God and have Him hold on to it and have Him work in our minds, in our thinking, in our understanding, so that our perspective then will be brought in accordance with His will. Commit it to Him and leave it there. How does this help us with the issue then of what we observe in the world, what we see in our circumstance of life, what happens in our communities around us? Well, firstly, it helps us to recognize who truly is in control. It's the living God. Two, it rightly sets our thought and approach to the matter. It causes us to ultimately say, because you're in charge, Lord, you have it. It's not up to me. Number three, it's very freeing because it frees us up to be able to live in faithful dependence and in recognition of the work and will of God. Habakkuk sets before us the struggle that he dealt with in terms of evil. And as he walked us through this matter, he causes us to see who it is that we must go to. Oftentimes, when we deal with matters in our own lives, we don't stay there. Habakkuk teaches us otherwise. May God help us to understand who He is and what He's accomplishing. And as He does, to direct our steps accordingly then, not to look at ourselves, not to look at our circumstances or situation, but ultimately to look to the living God and walk in faith and trust in Him.